Welcome back. I'm Guru Catherine, founder at Geode Blockchain and guide for your personal journey. And today I want to talk about what I personally observed having just been through two hurricanes in a row here on the west coast of Florida, and the case for both decentralized and what I would call hybrid disaster response. There's an opportunity here. Centralized disaster response is in some ways required and in many ways ineffective. Decentralized, I think, has an opportunity here to really do something exciting, to really do something helpful. So I want to talk about my own personal experiences here, the experiences I've heard about in places that were arguably much harder hit in North Carolina, and where I see this going in the future and how I think we could do this better. So let's start with what goes on here and the stories that we've all heard. And I want to hear your stories too. So if you have stories, please put them in the comments section. Tell me what you've been going through too with this one hell of a hurricane season here in 2024. So we just finished going through right here. We're in the town of Dunedin, Florida, on the West Coast, and we just enjoyed Helene and Milton in the span of 2.5 weeks. A 1-2 punch, which is just absolutely unheard of. One storm, in one good storm in an entire hurricane season is heard of. Two in a row? I grew up in Florida. This is like very strange. But it is what it is. So that's what we just went through. And here's what happens. There's really three phases of it. There's the anticipation of it, the planning, and the preparation, which can lead people to be in a lot of fear. As it's coming in, Floridians don't tend to do too much fear-based stuff over hurricanes, but they do go out and buy supplies. You take your sunshades down. You pick up the lawn furniture and put it away, right? And you do your preparations. And it is stressful, right? Even though it may not be trauma, it's still stressful. And then there's the riding out the storm itself, which is a little dicey, but the real problem actually comes in the aftermath. The aftermath of a hurricane is arguably the worst part, because you're going to lose electricity, you might lose water, you might lose sewer systems. It just depends on the storm. And in this particular one, we here just at our own home, we lost power twice for a total of 11 days, 5 days with the first storm, 6 days with the second storm. We were very, very lucky that we didn't lose water or sewer. A couple blocks that way, they lost sewer. A couple blocks that way, they lost water. Big trees down on power lines down in the road, people's houses burning down because tree snaps a power line. The power line does not trip off and a live line hits the house. So there was a house burned down because of that, just one block that way. Another house burned down because their electric vehicle got flooded with salt water and run a lithium battery through salt water. It will catch on fire, burn the whole house down. And the aftermath is it's horrible to see, right? Houses get flooded. Everybody's going in and pulling out their carpets, their furniture, their flooring, their drywall, which all got soaked, and pulling all of that out. And so you have everybody's, they call it their whole lives. It's not their whole lives. It's their stuff. Their stuff is piled up outside of their houses, and it's just everywhere. Huge, big piles of tree branches, sofas, flooring, drywall, clothing, you know, everything, whatever got flooded. Most houses around here are one story. They're not two stories tall. That's a different discussion of living in hot climates, but so it's pretty much most of their possessions, if not all. And waiting for the dump trucks to come and kind of clean everything up. And that's going to take a while. So as I record this, we're not there yet. Everything's still piled up everywhere. It sort of looks like a war zone out there. What happens next when you come out the other side of a hurricane is the next morning And this just happens naturally. And this is my first argument for decentralization disaster response, is that neighbors will just gather in the street. Neighbors will just kind of come out of their houses the next morning when it's sunny and beautiful and it looks like, you know, oh, everything's great. They'll come out and they'll talk. And everybody will start trading their stories of what happened, right? There's a tree down two houses that way that took out two vehicles and a power line at the same time. We had a house burned down over there, and everybody's just assessing the damage. What happened? Is everybody okay? And it's a whole little disaster response, but it's right there in your neighborhood with your neighbors. You know, are you okay? Are you okay? Is your house okay? Are your cars okay? What do you need? And we start taking stock of what everybody needs. Are there elderly in the neighborhood that can't get out of their houses? Or we had one case two doors the other way. A tree came down and trapped somebody in their house. So we got to get everybody who's got chainsaws and cut this tree up so they can get out of their house. So it's about the neighbors helping each other. And that's what happens first. Why? Because centralized entities can't get here fast enough. The roads are all blocked with trees and downed power lines. And they're trying to work the more egregious issues first, which makes sense, right? Power companies are going to work to get the hospitals back online first, and then the schools and the businesses, and we'll get around to the houses and when they can. Emergency services, right? Ambulance and fire are going to go attend to the ones that are on fire right now, not the ones that burned down last night. And when it comes to the sort of survival needs, which in Florida, in generally hot climates, you need ice to try to keep food cool. You need water to stay hydrated, obviously. And you need food. Now, obviously, we know we can go for several days without food and it's not a problem. It's called fasting. It's actually good for you. But a lot of people can't. And what about the kids? And what about the babies that need formula and diapers? And your whole horizon becomes this two-day limit where you have, let's say, 2 days of ice in the cooler to keep food cold so it doesn't spoil. Or maybe you only have 2 days worth of food on hand or that you can fit in that cooler. Or maybe you've got a generator and you can run a refrigerator, but you've only got 2 days of fuel for the generator. So it's all this two-day horizon, no matter what your situation is. You have 2 days of supplies to keep your own household in this, what becomes a survival state. Now, you're in no real danger at this point, but it's an incredibly distracting mindset when you can really, you really only feel like you can think 2 days out, because when you get back out there and you try to get more fuel for your generator and the gas stations don't have power, so the pumps aren't operating, or the gas stations have run out of gas. So in this last one in Milton, that was the craziest supply shock I've ever seen. All the gas stations were down except for two. So you had huge lines of cars. The sheriff's office, the sheriff's deputies, the police were guarding the gas stations as they should, keeping order and keeping a line of traffic flowing and directing the traffic into and out of the gas stations and keeping everybody chill. So that nobody gets crazy or upset, because desperate people do desperate things. And then the rest of the gas stations, which would normally serve the area, either didn't have gas or didn't have power, so you couldn't pump the gas. Now, why is the gas all that freaking important? Generators. Because the generators are keeping people's food cold and keeping them fed in general. There's two major grocery stores that serve the town. There's a third one that's a sort of a smaller one. We're not going to really count that one. One of them, their generators failed. And they lost 100%. An entire grocery store full of refrigerated and frozen section, gone. So then everybody who would have split between two grocery stores was now going to one. And so you go in there, and I took photos. I don't normally take a lot of photos, but this was like, wow, I have to document this. This is crazy. There's just nothing. There's just very, very little of anything in the frozen, refrigerated produce. Why? And it stays that way for a while, and it gets worse because trucks can't get into the area to supply the gas stations and the grocery stores. Now, why is that? Because when they evacuated 5 million people from the west coast of Florida, those 5 million people went up I-75 to head north because south wasn't safe. So they head north up I-75 up the middle of Florida, and there was no gas south of Lake City. Even people trying to evacuate had a hard time getting as far north as they wanted because they were running out of gas and there wasn't any gas left in the gas stations. So then you have an issue that trucks supplying grocery stores need gas too. Now, often they're diesel, not regular gas, but they need gas too. Where does that gas come from? Often from the port of Tampa, also from the port of Miami and Everglades, you know, Manatee and all that, Jacksonville. So Tampa's a major port, and the port lost power. So what that meant is that you could not offload the gas and the diesel and the food and such from the ships and get them off the ships. So they had to get power to the back to the port first. So you have this huge supply shock, right? You don't have anything in the grocery stores because you can't get the gas. You can't get the gas because it's stuck on the ship. Because the port has no power. Where centralized disaster response shines is in understanding that chain and prioritizing. So the government of Florida itself has its own emergency management, its own disaster response plans, and we do hurricanes all the time. So this is just the next one. And that's not to belittle the destruction from it. The west coast of Florida is absolutely torn up from this year. But the government of Florida understands. We know what we need to do first. Number one, you have to get the ports back up and working. And so that's what they were focused on. Get power back to the port of Tampa and Manatee, Everglades, and all the ones that were hit. So while they're over there doing that, so they can get the gas off the ships and then provide police escort for the gas trucks. Why? So they can drive faster and get safely into the gas stations and fill them up so that the people can get the gas, right? So centralized government is working all of that. And they're very good at that. Meanwhile, that process takes days. And that's days in which people need water, people need food refrigeration, people need trees cut up and moved out of the way just so they can get out of their house or get into their house. You have highly unsafe situations with power lines down in the street, in your yard, different places. And People may need medicines, right? People have immediate needs while centralized governments are doing what they can in the priority order in which they must do it. And this is where your neighbors come in. And this jives with every storm I've ever been through. This is, I don't know, I've lost track. 6, 8, 9, something like that. Everyone will tell you, in a major disaster, it's about your neighbors. It's about how you come together and make sure on that first morning, not 3 or 4 or 5 days later, does everybody have what they need? And once you make sure everybody's got what they need, then everybody's kind of on a glide path for a few days. After a few days, maybe 3 days, morale starts to get pretty rough. The psychology of it as it continues. And if the weather is particularly hot and humid, that makes it worse. And we were lucky on Milton that the weather was quite lovely afterwards. That was incredibly lucky. But the damage was so much worse, just so much worse. So while centralized disaster response systems were bringing in 50,000 linemen in their trucks from all over the country, which is amazing. Think about those 50,000 linemen. Those are individual linemen and companies led by individuals who made a choice to send the trucks, and the people made a choice. The linemen themselves made a choice to go with the trucks and do the work. 16, 18 hour days, day after day after day after day after day, in this mess. The choice of the individual to support each other, whether they are storing food for someone else because their freezer is working well and theirs is not, whether they are offering food, getting together, right? If you lose power, you're about to lose an entire fridge full of food. You better cook it up quick, and now it becomes a neighborhood cookout. Making sure everybody's fed, neighbors making sure everybody has water, neighbors making sure everybody has ice and food refrigeration and food to eat that's not spoiled, and any other kind of supplies that they need, right? Neighbors helping each other, hunting around for where can I get gas for my generator? Where can I get propane for my generator? Where are the supplies? Where can I find them? This decentralized nature of it that's already happening, I think could be formalized. Because what the people need in a disaster-stricken area is, one, obviously, food, clothing, shelter, water, but also purpose and a job to do. You need to be busy, because if you're sitting by idly just thinking about it, you go crazy. And after a few days, everybody just starts getting really depressed. So what if you take those neighbors in that disaster-stricken area who are already working to help each other, and you codify that and you give that credit and you put it on chain and you put them to work immediately? Clean up. Helping to distribute supplies to each other. And we saw this a little bit in that our state government is not just smart, but this is not our first rodeo. We do this all the time. So we deal with the destruction of hurricanes every single year. So what they do is they take ice, water, and pre-prepared meals, and they distribute them down to the city, and I mean little town level, so that at every person's little town hall, you can just pull up with your car and they'll give you some ice, water, and some food if you need it. So then what's happening at the neighborhood level is people are going and getting those supplies for the other people who need it, who may be too elderly or infirm to get out of their house. Right, and go and get that for them and bring it back. So while the centralized disaster response does a good job, and certainly the best they could possibly do, working those big issues, get the port back online, get the supply chain back online, that's incredibly important. It's the neighbors that actually make sure that those supplies are getting down to the individual household level, and that their individual neighbors are cared for. It's groups of maybe 10 people, 12 people banding together to make sure that everyone has what they need. And the really cool thing is that in every neighborhood is what you need. Every neighborhood has what you need. Every single one. So in every neighborhood, I mean, go look in your own neighborhood. There's somebody who knows about plumbing, who knows about, electrical work. There's somebody who knows how to work on cars or deal with damaged cars. There's somebody who knows how to cook really well. There's somebody who's, a teacher, a babysitter, right? Everything you need is at that neighborhood level somewhere. And so the potential for decentralizing disaster response in concert with centralized responses, you know, at the state and county level, could be even more effective, right? Put those people to work who have just been affected. Make them feel purposeful. They're already there in the place that needs help. And you could reward that on chain in a decentralized system. You could pay them, which would be a good thing because many of them have just lost their livelihoods. So you could pay them to be there doing the work that needs to be done to recover from the disaster. And you could do all that on blockchain. So that is my point. Disaster recovery is partly a state and local issue. Someone say, oh, it's a federal issue. Federal level is not very effective right now, at least in the U.S. I can't speak for other countries, but in the United States, federal disaster response is not useful. The problem is when you get up at that level, they can't be everywhere all the time. They can't get the supplies where they need to go. And there are many, many, many other issues, which I think we all know if you've been paying attention. So don't count on federal. State level, if you have a good state level response, Florida does, and I am incredibly thankful for that. Florida state response, hurricane response is phenomenal. But even then, it takes the individual down at the neighborhood level. It comes down to the individual. And so I think we can put that on chain. So that's my point. How about decentralized disaster response? Let me know your thoughts. I think we could use blockchain and decentralized apps to make this even better and even more effective, having just been through it twice in 10 days. And I feel incredibly awful for the people further south of us who had it even worse. Up in North Carolina, Georgia, South Carolina, mountains of Tennessee that have it so much worse. Look at the individual response to that. Individuals flying in their helicopters for rescue. Individuals sending donkey trains up the Appalachian Trail full of supplies. Amazing stories. This needs to be cataloged, written to chain, and rewarded. That's my point. All right, tell me what you think. Tell me what you've been through. Tell me what your neighbors have been doing. I hope we are done with this hurricane season. Please. And I will see you on chain. See you soon.